If we want to go forward, we've got to look back. Let me say that again. If we want to go forward, we've got to look back. If we want to go forward in having a life abundantly, living life following Jesus, living life, as he says, to the full, then sometimes we've got to look back. We've got to deal with the sin and the failure in our lives. We've got to deal with how we've messed up with what we've done. But most of the time, we don't want to look back. We just want to press on. We just want to keep going. We don't want to deal with that stuff behind us. This psalm is about King David. King David, the ancient, great king of ancient Israel. It's about a time when he just wanted to press on, when he just wanted to keep moving forward, and he didn't want to look back. He didn't want to deal with what he'd done. The story is mentioned in the prologue to the psalm. The prologue is the bit just before verse 1. It says, when the prophet Nathan came to him after David had committed adultery with Bathsheba. Now, most of you are familiar with that story, but let me just outline it so that we're all on track. David was the great king of ancient Israel. We're told he was a person after God's own heart, that he served God and kept close to God. But one day he goes off the rails, and it goes like this. He uses his power and position to commit adultery with another man's wife, and then he deceitfully covers it up by arranging for the other man's killing, for his murder. He uses his power and position to commit adultery with another man's wife, and then he even covers it up by arranging for the man's killing. It's a shocking story. But what's even more shocking about it is that David just seems to just keep moving on. He just wants to press on, move forward, forget about the past. He doesn't think he has to deal with it. But God intervenes in the story. God sends Nathan the prophet to David. And God says through Nathan the prophet to David, much of what I'm saying tonight. David, if you want to go forward, you've got to look back. You've got to face what you've done. Now, Nathan the prophet isn't here today. And even though Nathan's not here, I think there's a sense, though, that God wants to speak to us the same message. If we want to go forward in our Christian lives, if we want to go forward, we've got to look back. We've got to look at some of the things we've failed in the past. Maybe you're here today and there's something a long, long time ago that you're deeply ashamed of and hardly anyone knows about. But it eats at you still. You try and put it out of your mind, but there's shame and there's guilt always there. You can never quite forget it. If that's you, I think God is saying today, look back, start dealing with this, face up to what you've done. Or maybe you're here today and you know it's not something so much in the past, but it's something you keep struggling with. You keep failing in this certain thing. You keep sinning and you feel like you're addicted to it. You're addicted to sinning and you can't get out. And you just don't want to think about it anymore. You just don't want to deal with it anymore. I think God is saying to you today from this psalm, look back. Start dealing with this. Start facing this today. Or Maybe there are ways that you as a church have things that you need to look back at, that you need to deal with to move forward. I don't know this church yet. I don't know any of you, Harley, so I don't have anything in mind. But I think this psalm makes us think, not just in terms of individuals, but also in terms of communities like a church. You see in the prologue, it says the very first words, for the director of music. For the director of music. This psalm isn't just about individuals. It was a psalm that Israel would sing communally. The choir would sing it and it would be part of Israel's worship. It's not just an individual psalm, but a communal psalm for the community. So we've got to ask, are there things that we or you as a church need to go back and deal with? After all, ancient Israel didn't want to look back at the idolatry in their midst. They didn't want to deal with the sin in their midst. They were a community who didn't want to deal with things. Or in the New Testament, Corinth, the church in Corinth, they were another community that wanted to just keep moving forward, but never wanted to look back at what was really going on among them. So I'm just asking the question, I'm trying to be faithful to the text, not get anything in mind. But are there ways as a church that you just want to move forward
ways in which you also don't want to look back. Either way, whether as individuals or as a community, this psalm speaks to us and says this: if we want to move forward, we've got to look back. But what does this look like? What does it actually look like to deal with sin and failure, to take a look back, to start facing up to these kind of things? I think that's what this psalm is about. This psalm, if you like, is a picture of what it looks like to look back, what it looks like to deal with sin and failure in our lives. This psalm is trying to show us, by showing us David's way of dealing with it, trying to show us how we should deal with the sin and failure in our lives. So, looking back looks like this. Number one, first, looking back looks like this. We got to deal personally with God. We got to deal personally with God. Look again at verses 1 and 2 and see how the psalm starts. Have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. Blot out my transgressions. Wash away all my iniquity and cleanse me from my sin. See that he first goes to God. He first speaks to God about what he's done. He first speaks to God about his sin and failure. So we often do something different, don't we? Instead of speaking to God first about our sin or our failure, we speak to ourselves first. That's often where we go. Some of us here, we speak to ourselves first by kind of beating ourselves up. We kind of beat ourselves up. Oh, failed again. Messed it up, you idiot. How can you ever get things right? We speak to ourselves rather than to God first. Or others of us, we don't beat ourselves up, but we kind of pump ourselves up. Oh, we fail and we say, well, I'm not going to do that again. Come on, Tim, get it right this time. We speak to ourselves first and we pump ourselves up. But either way, whether beating ourselves up or pumping ourselves up, we're not going to God first. We're not following the pattern of this psalm that says, first speak to God. First say to him, have mercy on me, God. We've got to deal personally with God. But notice something else in the first line of the psalm. Notice this, that David deals personally with God. He speaks to God by name. It isn't just in the first line, have mercy on me, O God. But it's all throughout the psalm. Verse 10, create in me a pure heart, O God. Verse 14, deliver me from the guilt of bloodshed, O God. You who are my God and Savior. Verse 15, open my lips, Lord. He speaks to God personally. He speaks to God not as a concept, not as a worldview, not as a doctrine. He doesn't speak about God. He speaks to God personally. Now, I'm pointing this out because sometimes there's a danger in our churches, and particularly in good churches, where we can get so used to talking about God, so used to learning and thinking about who God is and what he has done, that we can so get used to talking about God that we start to forget to speak to God. Forget that that's the first thing to do. Forget that dealing with God personally is the first thing in our lives. But if we want to deal with our sin and failure, if we want to look back, then this psalm says that we have to not just speak about God or think of him as a concept. We've got to speak personally to God, call on him, deal with him personally. So that's number one. First in our picture, in our picture from this psalm of what it looks like to look back. We've got to look back to go forward. It looks like this. We've got to deal personally with God. Then number two, if we want to go forward, we've got to look back. What does this look like to deal with the sin and failure in our lives? Number two, we've got to face up to our sin before God. We've got to face up to our sin before God. We've got to look it in the eye, see it for what it is, see the seriousness of what we've done. We call this confession. That's what we call it in the Christian church. Confessing our sin is facing up to what we've done, facing up to the seriousness of what we've done and bringing it before God. So I'm going to read verses 3-6 in this passage, and you can see here how he does face up to what he's done. He doesn't write it off. He doesn't say, oh, it doesn't matter, or it was a long time ago now. Instead, he lays it out and sees what he's done and the seriousness of it. Verse 3, for I know my transgressions, and my sin is always before me. Against you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight, so that you are right in your verdict, and justified when you judge. Surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. Yet you desired faithfulness even in the womb. You taught me wisdom in that secret place. So see here how he faces up to the seriousness of what he's done. He says in verse 4, against you, God, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight. He realizes that his sin isn't just against human beings, but against the creator of the universe. He's offended the very creator, the very God who made all things. Now, there's a bit of a question mark here, though, isn't there? There's a bit of a problem here that we've got to ask of this text. And it's this. What about Bathsheba and Uriah? What about the woman who David committed adultery with and used his position and status to make that happen? And what about the man who David then stole his wife and then got him killed? Do they not matter? The psalm doesn't mention them. It says, against you, you only have I sinned. Does it mean that they are not significant in any way? Well, I think the answer is no. I think that Bathsheba and Uriah are taken really seriously in this psalm. I think they're taken very seriously. And I'm going to try and explain why. Why I think this psalm isn't making light of Bathsheba and Uriah, but taking them seriously. Let me use an illustration. Let me use a kind of picture to do this. Back when I was at school, when I was in Scotland, there was a guy in the school. He was the school bully. And he was the meanest, toughest guy in the school. And his name was Puddin. Now, I don't know why he was called Puddin. I never dared ask him. But that was his name. And nobody messed with Puddin. He was a very serious guy. Now, there was this other fella who was a friend of mine. And his name was John. And John was a nice guy. He was a good guy. There was nothing kind of particularly sinister about John. But everyone took John very seriously. And here's the reason. John was Puddin's cousin. To mess with John was to mess with Puddin. To insult John was to insult Puddin, or to offend Puddin. And let me try and get this back to the psalm. What I'm saying is, just like to mess with John was to mess with Puddin. That's how serious we took John in those days. In the same way, in this text, what we're seeing is, to mess with Bathsheba is to mess with the Creator God. To touch Uriah is to touch the Creator God. That's how seriously this psalm takes these people. It doesn't make light of them. It says that actually to touch them and hurt them and offend them and insult them is very serious. Now, don't get me wrong, God is not like Puddin. God's not mean. God's not a bully. But what I'm saying is that Bathsheba and Uriah are not dismissed in this passage. It's taken very seriously. To mess with them is to mess with God. And when we come to our own sin, we find much the same thing. That person that we hurt last week, and we don't really think anything of it. After all, it was a week ago now. To hurt them is to hurt God, according to the Bible. To hurt someone made in God's image, to hurt one of his creatures, is to insult God himself. We've got to face up to the very seriousness of our sin. Against you, God, against you have we sinned, you only. And then also, so hear me now, I'm moving on a wee bit. We've got to face up to the seriousness of our sin, that we've sinned against God himself. But we've also got to face up to something else, the corruption that lies behind our sin. We've got to face up to the corruption that lies behind our failures to love people and to love God. You can see the psalm doing this in verse 5. Surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me. What David's saying here is he's acknowledging that this isn't just a one-off, that this isn't just an accident, that it's not just that he's a good guy, a really good guy to the core, and something just happened today and it's just an aberration to everything. No, instead he's acknowledging that he is sinful to his core. Even from his conception on birth, he's been sinful. And that he sinned here because he was sinful. He's a sinner at core, and therefore this has happened. This is part of what we talk about in the Christian church when we talk about the doctrine or the teaching of original sin. When we say original sin, we were talking about this core corruption that we all have as human beings from the time of our conception. We don't mean anything's wrong with our conception, that there's something kind of sinful about the sexual act. We don't mean that. And we don't mean that kind of cute little babies are really evil and wicked and we kind of hate babies in any way. We don't mean that. And we don't mean that there's no good in the world, that everything's as terrible as it could possibly be and everything's corrupt. We don't mean that. And we don't even mean that there's nothing good we can say about humanity and about human beings. After all, we believe that human beings are made in the image of God. We believe there's something beautiful, something, in a sense, awesome about human beings. But we also believe that this other side, this corruption to human beings, that from our very conception, that from the very beginning of our lives, we have this corruption within us. Behold, it says, "Oh, surely I was sinful at birth, sinful from the time my mother conceived me." Or let me put it another way. Nobody had to teach us to sin. I mean, sure, our parents, the way they raised us and our upbringing and the environment we were around shaped, if you like, the kind of sins we carry out as individuals. But nobody had to teach us in the first place to do wrong things, to go off the rails. Nobody had to do that. If I use an illustration, we've got this little 14-month-old daughter. And about a few months ago, she started doing this thing where she would just scream in her mum's face. If she didn't have enough food, she would just scream. And it was not a nice thing to see, to be honest. She would kind of clench her fists and just let out this yell right in her mum's face. And I got home from work one day, and Claudia said to me, "Did you teach her to do that?" And I said, "No, did you teach her to do that?" And of course, neither of us taught her to do that. She didn't need anyone to teach her to do that. She doesn't need anyone to teach her to be naughty or to behave badly. Now, we love her and we think very highly of her. But we've got to say, she's also, in a sense, even at her age, a little sinner. So sin in our lives, David's sin in this story, is not an aberration. It's not a one-off. It's not just a mistake. When we face up to our sin, when we stop just moving forward and take a look back, we've got to see the seriousness of our sin, that we've sinned against God, we've messed with Him. And we also see the corruption, the core corruption that lies behind it. So then, moving on, number three. If we want to move forward, we've got to look back. What does that look like? It looks like this. We've got to ask God for cleansing and renewal. We've got to ask God for cleansing and renewal. Let me read again. And look out here for David asking first for cleansing and then for renewal. Let me start in verse 7. This is the cleansing part. "Cleanse me with hyssop and I will be clean. Wash me and I shall be whiter than snow. Let me hear joy and gladness. Let the bones you have crushed rejoice. Hide your face from my sins and blot out all my iniquity." That's the cleansing part. And then verse 10 is the renewal part. "Create in me a pure heart, O God, and renew a steadfast spirit within me. Do not cast me away from your presence or take your Holy Spirit from me. Restore to me the joy of your salvation and grant me a willing spirit to sustain me." We've got to ask God first for cleansing. We can't cleanse ourselves. We can't forgive ourselves. We can't make ourselves not guilty or deal with our own sin. The words here make it clear how difficult it is to cleanse, to wash the sin out of us. The words that are used are like the words purge, wash, cleanse, blot out. These words are, the picture behind them is that of washing clothes. That's the kind of image that's being brought to mind here. Now, we all have washing machines. Washing clothes is fairly easy for us. But you can imagine in the ancient world how to get the grime out of the clothes, you had to scrub them, you had to beat them, you had to work at them. It was hard work, washing clothes. And that's the image being used here, that it's not easy to cleanse us, that it's not easy to get the stain out of us, that we need God to do it. We need God to intervene because we can't manage this ourselves. So we've got to ask for cleansing, and then we've also got to ask for renewal. None of us can stop sinning. Sure, we can tinker around with our lives, we can change parts of our lives, but we can't turn our lives around and stop sinning entirely. We're addicted to sin. All of us are addicted to sin. Notice the word here in verse 10, "create." "Create in me a pure heart, O God." The word "create" in the Hebrew is the word bara.
And the word bara is used only in a very special way in the Old Testament. Every time it's used, it's only ever something God does, and it's only ever something God can do. Only God baras in the Old Testament. Only God creates. So when the word's used here in verse 10, creating me a pure heart, it's an indication that this is a job only God can do. Only God can create pure hearts in us. Only God can renew us. We've got to ask for renewal. But see one more thing here. See another thing. That it's a both and. It's both cleansing and renewal. We've got to ask for both cleansing and renewal. Some of us here, we're tempted to come to church, and what we really only want is the cleansing part. We want to live our lives our way. We want to live for success and significance and wealth and comfort. And all we really want is a little God sprinkling to kind of tell us we're okay and we'll be in heaven one day. And that's all we want. We're not really interested in turning our lives around, in having God's renewal to change us. And others of us, we're not so interested in the cleansing part, but we want the renewal part. We come to church because we like a little bit of the community, and we want to be a bit inspired for the week ahead. We want to have some good singing together and kind of feel revved up to go for the next week. It's almost like a self-help thing. But we're not interested in forgiveness. We're not really wanting to talk about sin. We just want the renewal. But for God, it's a both and thing. It's only both cleansing and renewal. It's never one or the other. It's just like we said in the beginning. We want to go forward and we don't want to look back. Some of us don't want to look back at cleansing. Some of us don't want to look back at renewal. But God only does both. So, if we want to move forward, we've got to look back. We've got to ask for cleansing and renewal. Number four then. Fourth, what does it look like to look back? What does it look like? Number four, we got to resolve before God to go forward. We got to resolve before God to go forward. Let me read the end of the psalm to you again. I'm going to read from verse 13 onwards. And notice here the sense of resolve, the sense of decision in this psalm. If God will help me, if God will cleanse and renew me, then I will move forward, he says, in witness, in telling others about what he's done, and in worship, in praising and sacrificing to God. He says, if God will do this, I resolve to go forward. Let me read it. Verse 13. Then I will teach transgressors your ways, so that sinners will turn back to you. Deliver me from the guilt of bloodshed, O God. You who are my God and Savior, and my tongue will sing of your righteousness. Open my lips, Lord, and my mouth will declare your praise. You do not delight in sacrifice, or I would bring it. You do not take pleasure in burnt offerings. My sacrifice, O God, is a broken spirit. A broken and contrite heart you, God, will not despise. May it please you to prosper Zion, to build up the walls of Jerusalem. Then you will delight in the sacrifices of the righteous, in burnt offerings offered whole. Then bulls will be offered on your altar. Now there's a lot going on in that section. There's a lot of talk about witness, and there's a lot of talk about worship. But we don't have time to look at too much at those things just now. I just want to draw your attention to this sense of resolve in this passage, to the sense of decision and deciding to move forward. Did you see it? Verse 13, then I will teach transgressors your ways. Verse 15, and my mouth will declare your praise. Verse 14, my tongue will sing of your righteousness. Notice here that this isn't a kind of a flow thing. It's not a kind of automatic thing. He doesn't say, well, God, if you'll just cleanse me and renew me, then this will just automatically happen. I'll worship, I'll witness, it'll just come out of me just automatically. It'll just flow. That's not what he's saying. There's this sense of I will. Scholars call this, Old Testament scholars call this, a vow of thanksgiving. Or some people call it a promise. I'm using the word resolve. Same, much the same thing. It's not just a flow thing. It's not just an automatic thing. See, the reason I'm saying this, the reason why I think this is important, is that sometimes as Christians, we can get the idea that if we could just get excited enough about the gospel, about the good news about Jesus, or if we can just fall in love enough with Jesus, then the life, Christian life, will just flow out of us like some sort of automatic thing, like some sort of easy thing. There'll be no effort, there'll be no decision, there'll be no resolve. And we spend our time sometimes psyching ourselves up. Oh, I need to be more excited. I need to be more in love with Jesus. And we kind of psych ourselves up in the hope that we can get to that kind of automatic thing, that kind of flow thing. But I don't think that's how the Bible sees the Christian life. Certainly not here. It's not seeing it here. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a place for feeling more excited about the good news of Jesus, the gospel. And of course, we could all do with falling in love more with Jesus. And there are some times, aren't there, when we're so in love with Jesus, but there is a sense of flow sometimes. But it's not always that way. That's not always how life is. As if there's no need for resolve and decision and effort going forward. That's not the picture here. And it's not the picture of the Bible. In fact, I think it's a cultural thing that we've kind of absorbed. Think of how our culture thinks about marriage. If you fall in love with the right person, the one, then marriage kind of, think of Hollywood, it'll just flow. You'll just happily ever after. It'll just work out and there'll be no effort or decision or resolve needed. Marriage will just flow. Or think about how sometimes our culture sees work. If you can just find the job that perfectly expresses who you are and is a perfect fit, then you'll be perfectly fulfilled and you'll kind of leap out of bed in the morning and work won't be hard at all. But we all know that these things aren't true. Those of us who are married know that marriage is hard. It involves decision, resolution, vows, promises. And that work is hard. That no workplace is perfect, no matter how much we like our work, it still involves commitment and diligence. Well, it's the same with the Christian life. Our Christian life isn't just a flow thing. It doesn't come automatic. It involves resolve and decision. We've got to resolve before God to go forward. And then number five, if we want to move forward, we've got to look back. What does that look like? We've got to trust God for his love and mercy. We've got to trust God for his love and mercy. The psalm here is full of God's love and mercy. But sometimes when we read it, we can kind of miss it and start to think that it's all about us and what we have to do. We can even start to think that dealing with sin itself is all about us and what we have to do to deal with sin. But that's not what's here. God deals with sin. God in his love and mercy deals with sin. That's what it says. See verse 1 again. Have mercy on me, O God, according to the fact that I kept the five things the preacher said on Sunday. That's not what it says. These five things I've been saying aren't ways of dealing with sin on our own. They're ways of dealing with sin by bringing it to God, who is the one who really deals with sin. And it doesn't say, have mercy on me, O God, because I've sorted it out now. I've got it under control. It says, have mercy on me, O God, according to your unfailing love, according to your great compassion. In your love, Lord, in your compassion and kindness, deal with my sin, sort it out. We've got to trust God for his love and mercy. And then see verse 17, similar again, verse 17, the end of it. It says, a broken and contrite heart, you, God, will not despise. See the love and the mercy there. See this great promise, in a sense, that we can lean on, that we can hang on to. That if we come to God with a broken and contrite heart, with humility about what we've done, with acknowledgement of how we've sinned and failed, he promises us this, that you, God, will not despise us. This is his promise. Because in the end, this is the story of the Bible, that God deals with sin, that we can't deal with sin, but that God deals with it. It climaxes when Jesus Christ dies on the cross, and then God raises him from the dead, dealing with sin. And then the story finishes, when Jesus Christ will return one day to deal with all sin and evil forever and ever, to bring in a new world where nothing is wrong, where there is no more evil anymore, where there is no more injustice. The whole Bible is the story of God dealing with his sin. That's in the end why we've got to look to him and trust him to deal with our sin and failure. We could even say it this way, that the Bible tells us that God is a sin specialist, that he is a sin specialist. If you have a skin problem, then you go to a skin specialist. If you have a heart problem, you go to a heart specialist. Well, we as human beings have a sin problem. And the good news is that God is a sin specialist. He deals with sin.
And when we go to him with our sin and failure, when we stop moving forward for a moment and look back and start to deal with the things we've done and continue to do, when we face our sin, here's his promise, that he does not despise us, that he will not despise us. So if you're here today, and you want to go forward, but there's something in the past that's always eating at you, that you can't put away the guilt and the shame of it, you just can't forget about it, then the encouragement from this psalm is to start doing business with God today, to start opening it up to him and speaking to him about it, to start bringing it to him. The promise is he will not despise you. And if you're here today and you're going forward, but there's something you keep failing at and keep struggling in, and you just don't want to deal with it anymore, it's like you're addicted to it, it's like you can't escape it, then this psalm says, start dealing with it today. Start talking to God about it today. Bringing it to him today. The promise is, he will not despise you when you do. So if we want to go forward, we got to look back. Hear this today. Deal with sin and failure today. Do business with God today. Bring things to God today. He will not despise you. He will not despise you. He will not despise you. That is his promise. Let's pray.